Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. Next month, the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument turns 3. It's been a busy year for the park. Workers have been building a new trail network, a $120,000 project. Managers have been holding public meetings, seeking feedback in order to create a long-term management plan for the monument. The group, Friends of Katahdin Woods and Waters, this spring published a bird checklist. A waterproof map and paddling guide are now both available. I could go on. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are live from the Katahdin region. We are at North Light Gallery in Millinocket to discuss what's been happening at the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument and what the future might look like. What are your comments or questions? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Live from the North Light Gallery in Millinocket, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. August 24th marks the 3-year anniversary of the creation of the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. Today, we're going to learn what's been happening in that time and what plans are in store for the future. Joining me here, Kayla Rush, the education coordinator for the Friends of Katahdin Woods and Waters, Tim Hudson, the superintendent of Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument, and a longtime National Park Service facilities and parks manager, and Lucas St. Clair, executive director for Elliottsville Plantation, Inc., which donated the land for the park. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you visited Katahdin Woods and Waters yet? If so, what did you do while you were here? Are you wondering about the future? Do you have ideas? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you in the audience. Welcome guests, and thank you again to Marcia Donahue, her husband Wayne, and the beautiful North Light Gallery here in Millinocket. Tim, I want to start with some basics. You told Maine Public Radio yesterday that 18,000 summer visitors came to Katahdin Woods and Waters last year. What do we know about these people? What were they doing there? Where are they coming from? How long are they staying? Give us an idea of what the experience has been for visitors so far.
About 45% of them come and do the loop road in the south. The rest of them disperse through the monument. The north end is more recreation, so you get the backcountry users, river, and walks along the river. And that takes care of about 30% of the people that come in right now. As for staying, we don't have a list of overnight stays. We know that there's a lot of day trippers. We also know that we give out a number of parking permits, and we have people staying overnight in the backcountry. The campgrounds are used regularly, especially the Sandbank campgrounds on south. The south is the most popular one. We know that as soon as the monument was created, the EPI, who had the land for him, had a counter up on a loop road. They were getting about 5.5 people a day. And as soon as we opened, we were around 18 vehicles a day coming through. So it was quite an increase. And that's pretty much stayed through all the way through, with especially in the summer and in the fall.
All right. And what about this season? Is it sort of on the same pace or seeming to be busier?
Actually, we were up a little bit this year, which was kind of surprising. It was mostly due to increased visitation in the north, because as most of you know, nobody opened early this year,
and that's right.
We did not get the road open until the 31st of May, and we still had one road where you didn't want to get off to one side because you were going to sink a wee bit. Frost coming out of the ground late, so it's we're up about 200 people.
Okay, well, Lucas, this park was yours and your mom's vision. 3 years in, how is what's actually happening here measuring up to your hopes and dreams for the park?
Well, it's pretty remarkable to see so many people coming and enjoying it. I was up here over the 4th of July weekend with a couple friends, and we were driving the loop road, and to come to an intersection where for years I'd never seen a car and have a few cars drive by, it's an exciting thing to see. And to see how the tenor of the conversation has changed so dramatically from you know, the disagreements over what this should become and how it should look and who should manage it and whether or not it becomes federal land or not, to a pretty thorough embracing of the park itself and seeing the communities now sort of orient themselves to the landscape, thinking, all right, this is a real asset for us, and how do we best utilize this asset? And that thinking has become so much more productive, and all the communities are kind of taking their own strategy on how to encourage people to come visit and then encourage people to come back into their communities and stay and use the restaurants and shop in the stores. And so it's certainly a work in progress, but it's been really exciting to see the energy change from sort of the controversy to what it is now.
How confident are you that Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument is here to stay?
I'm very confident. I think that Senator King and his relationship with Secretary Bernhardt sort of solidified it in permanence, and so I feel really confident that it's here to stay.
Kayla, you are here representing a group of local people. So you know better than anyone else how divisive this was leading up to the creation of the monument. How does that history affect the work you're doing now? What's important going forward?
Well, I think that the designation, for one, made it possible for the Katahdin Learning Project to start in 2016. And that's a place-based learning initiative. And there's really a focus on working with area schools and teachers and partners to offer students educational experiences not only in their communities but in Katahdin Woods and Waters too. And I think we were able to accomplish so much not only because of the amazing teachers and resources in this area, and of course EPI, and so many wonderful people that also believed we were wanting students to have something they were connecting to. We knew that the education was great, and we had a number of people that had some more ideas. And so together we were able to form the Katahdin Learning Project, and it was really because the monument was put in place that we were able to do that.
So tell us about the Katahdin Learning Project. Who is involved in that? Is it school children of a certain age? What does it involve?
It's all of the youth of the Katahdin region, all area schools and teachers. The door is really open, and it really comes down to the youth of this region having just additional experiences, other opportunities, authentic learning opportunities on the land, and feeling a sense of place and recognizing that there's a connection to be had. And many of them already had it. They already had a great sense of pride for this area, and that's easy to understand why, because it's a beautiful area, and amazing teachers around them to really highlight those. And this is an opportunity for us to take it a step further and let them become a little more invested in the process and their education in general.
Tim, I understand there have been a number of public meetings about the management of the park. What kinds of questions are you trying to answer? What are you hearing? How is that developing the management plan that I understand is supposed to be out this fall?
A draft should be out this fall. Yes, we've had 13 public meetings. And the first four were in the first month after the proclamation. I think the first meeting we had 185 people in Stacyville, which is probably one of the bigger crowds we've had in Stacyville for a while. And we had four others. And those were just straight listening sessions. Everything was new. After that, we've started to develop what's called a management framework. So where we're going to go in the big picture, not going to the depth of this is exactly where this trail is going to go, this is exactly what's going to be built here. It's more, these are the areas that are the resources, the resource values, and the activities blend together, which is always our conundrum of how to balance the resources and the visitation and make sure that you have the greatest experience possible while still protecting the resources. So as we started, we first ask people, what do you do here? What do you like to do? What do you see as the most important things? What are the resource values that you locally want to take care of? So we had most of our initial meetings were the furthest we got away was all the way to Bangor. That was it. We stayed in the Katahdin area. Then we branched out and we went up to Presque Isle and then down to we had two meetings in Portland. And as things come together, we've listened and we started to hear after about the sixth meeting, we started to hear kind of the same things. And so this last set of meetings, which was last month, we actually put out a management zone proposal. You know, please, this is what we think we heard from you. Here are the areas. Here's where we think this is a backcountry where nothing much is going to happen. This is a gateway area where you're going to come in and you're going to see more people, and it balances with the resources. And then we had heard, surprisingly enough, there wasn't a unanimous agreement on everything. And so we had areas that we crosshatched and said, we'd like to hear more about these areas that of we heard different things. And so that's where we are now. We've gotten the first feedback on that. The last meetings were the first ones, I think, that really got into, okay, there's something to look at here beforehand rather than gathering the information. But the first 2 years, we wanted to listen. It was all about listening.
Sheriff Tim, if somebody wants to look at what you're thinking, those maps that you're talking about, can they find those online?
Yes. Yes, they
can. How do they find them?
They're on our website, the Catawba Woods and Waters website.
Okay. And so, you know, is it too late to have people weigh in?
Oh, no. So this was just the first, this last session was the first ones we've had this, concept out like this. And so it was brand new. We heard a lot of good things. We'll be having another series of meetings on those, at least one more series of three, if not two more series of three in the fall. We find that holding meetings in August isn't really productive when everybody's too busy. And so that we take the feedback anytime anybody wants to have it. They can send emails in. There's a place to drop them. And so we collect those. We note those. And so we welcome people to look at it. And as the next sessions come up, we'll take down what we've heard in those areas of discussion.
Okay, well, we started the program by talking about how many people have come. You estimate 18,000 last summer. Doesn't even count people in the wintertime. Lucas, I suspect that you think more people would come if there was better signage. Lots of news coverage over the signs that didn't exist and now supposedly exist somewhere. What do we know about official signs to Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument?
Yeah, that's a great question. And certainly it's easier to go places when you know how to get there. And signs are super helpful. I know that the signs are made. They're sitting in our driveway in Shin Pond. So I've seen them. And the Park Service is working with various engineering firms to put it out to bid to get them set up. One thing that was really surprising to me is the size. When you whiz by a freeway sign at 70 miles an hour, they don't seem that big. But when you stand next to one and realize they have to be put up with cranes and concrete footings and all of that, and I understand why it's taking a little bit longer than some had hoped. But I think they're going to be up this year, and that'll dramatically help guide people to get into the monument.
When you say this year, not by August, though, which is sort of the big travel season in Maine.
Yeah, there'll be a next August, though. And, I think throughout this whole process, what I've realized is super important is that eventually we'll get there. And, while there's a rush to get things, so many things done all at once, there's only so much capacity. So
those bids will be, they're out, they're closed. We have contractors chosen. They just haven't been notified yet. And those awards will be made, but before the end of the month. So we've got the money's there, the work's there, so they're going up this fall.
Terrific. Well, Kayla, I want to ask you about what kind of partnership this entire project is. The Friends of Katahdin Woods and Waters is a fairly new organization, correct? And how does the Friends organization work with the Park Service and work with Elliottsville Plantation and the region to promote the park, to improve the park? How does it all work?
I think it's definitely teamwork. I mean, we all work together. We have similar missions, and it's really about protecting that land and helping to make it more accessible and helping to provide educational experiences. So I think that, we certainly had a lot of help from Elliottsville Plantation when we started the Katahdin Learning Project. There were days when our dreams were pretty lofty, and I wondered, could this be real? Could we really do this? I think with some support from teachers in this region, and then Susan and Mark Adams, we were really able. I mean, if you ever doubt yourself, go to Susan Adams. She'll be the one to say, no, of course you can do that. Let me show you how, or let me help you. But Elliottsville Plantation has played a pretty big role in making this happen. I can't say enough about the teachers in this region, though. And because of them, you know, this is really about them. It's about the students, first and foremost. It's about the youth of this area. They're the next generation.
And then just to add to that, the Park Service has just a finite amount of money to spend on every unit, and that number is worked out with a variety of different metrics. And this is a very new unit of the Park Service. The budget's pretty small, and the endowment that was created by EPI can offset only so much of it. But what the
and when we say EPI,
Elliottsville Plantation, yeah, exactly. So that's it's a private operating foundation that I'm the executive director of, and so there's only so much that can be there, and so. To sort of maximize that margin of excellence within any park unit, a friends group is oftentimes established. And there's several hundred around the country. Some are giant, like the Golden Gate Conservancy, which raises about $25 million a year. They have the advantage of being in San Francisco, where there's a lot of wealth. But Friends of Acadia, for example, is another great example of how friends groups come and work in really close partnership with the Park Service. They bring philanthropic funding, they run programs like the Learning Project, and I think in a lot of ways just open the awareness and understanding of what a unit of the Park Service can do for the local community.
All right, well, you mentioned that the budget isn't very big. Tim, what is the budget?
Well, right now it's $580,000.
That isn't very big.
No, and this place-based learning is a Park Service program we do in other parks, and so when we started here, it's like, this needs to happen. We didn't have the money to do it. So we started off with the people from the Park Service laying the groundwork, and that's when the endowment, Elliottsville, and the friends stepped in to make this keep going. Well, if we could have done it ourselves, we would have, but that was not in the cards.
Yeah, it was a detailee with the National Park.
Yeah.
Kayla, is there a goal? Is there a goal to, say, have every single fifth grader in this region come to the park and learn about nature and learn about history? Is there something stated like that?
We're certainly working towards that. We've had a vision, and with each year it changes a little bit, but it's for me, it's every single student in the Katahdin region is in on that land learning every single year. It's a little lofty, but I think we can do it.
Every student, every year.
Every student.
Okay, and before we go, I want to ask about before we go to a break, I want to ask about the trail building project. I understand that workers were really busy last fall, and now what is going to be accomplished in this project that didn't exist before?
Well, this project was set up as a partnership as get youth to work, so it's done through the Appalachian Mountain Club, and there's three major trails going, and one at Lynx Pond, which is going to be a fully accessible trail. We're not set up to have accessibility in there at this point very well. So this will be a chair that a wheelchair can go to the pond, take a look, viewing platform. There's a trail going into Deasy Pond, which is one of the great ponds in the monument that hasn't really had a trail to it before, up over in Esker. And we have the trail that was set up when Elliottsville had it, to look at a pond off the Esker Trail. This makes it easier to get to and goes along the Esker and allows for more parking than the one car we have now. So those are all be completed this year.
Just to add to that, there's this really interesting thing that's happening in the Katahdin region, and it's not just within Baxter State Park and within the monument, but in the surrounding areas, there's a lot of outdoor recreational infrastructure that's being added at the New England Outdoor Center, the Katahdin Area Trails is building a network of mountain biking trails and hiking trails and cross-country ski trails there. And then through the philanthropy of the Butler Conservation Fund on the east branch of the Penobscot, they've built an unbelievable network of biking and skiing trails and warming huts. And it's really a world-class place to go and recreate. And so it's wonderful to have that kind of whole, this complement of outdoor recreational infrastructure that's just enhancing this area as a region to go and recreate.
And I want to talk about that more when we come back from a break. And also when we come back, your comments and questions. We're live from the Northlight Gallery in Millinocket talking about the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Salaam Circus School in Biddeford, committed to preserving and sharing the technique and traditions of the circus arts. Classes at salaamcircus.com. And Foothills Management, committed to energy-efficient senior housing and commercial space in western and mid-coast Maine. Learn more at foothillsmanagement.com.
InSource Renewables is a solar cooperative of workers here based in Pittsfield, Maine. We're involved in the construction of solar energy systems for residences, commercial businesses, and municipalities. Our clients come from all over the state of Maine. They come from a variety of backgrounds, political leanings, age groups. Maine Public is great for that in terms of the breadth of audience that it has in all of those various demographics, as well as the geographic reach. We underwrite on Maine Public because we see Maine Public as a critical asset to the people of Maine. At a time when things are very polarized and we need information that we can trust, that's what Maine Public brings to the table. So, you know, as much as we underwrite with Maine Public to help establish a relationship and familiarity with our brand, we really see it as helping support an institution in the state of Maine that's critical to our future as both Mainers and as well as a Maine business trying to do well by our communities.
Have you ever wanted to manage a database that is at the very heart of what helps make your favorite Maine Public radio and television programs possible? Maine Public is seeking a full-time database administrator to join our advancement team to oversee Maine Public's philanthropic relationship management system. If you or someone you know have the skills to take this on and a passion for Maine Public Media, please visit mainepublic.org and click on About and then Careers. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're coming to you today from the Northlight Gallery in Millinocket, and we are talking about the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. Joining me, Tim Hudson, who is the superintendent of the monument, Lucas St. Clair, executive director of Elliottsville Plantation, Inc., and Kayla Rush, the education coordinator for Friends of Katahdin Woods and Waters. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And for those of you here with us in the audience, please feel free to step up to the mic and ask a question. And we do want to ask one specific member of our audience to come to the mic. Mike Elliott is now Katahdin Region Economic Development Director for the Eastern Maine Development Corporation. Mike, I understand it's a brand new position. Tell me about it.
Well, yeah, it's a great opportunity. It really came about, you know, we've talked a lot about how the region's coming together and doing a lot of great work. One of the identified needs for this region was to try to help coordinate all the great economic development efforts that are already in flight. And so the Penobscot County Commissioners were gracious enough to extend this position for 7 years, which is great because it doesn't put a burden on the municipalities themselves and allows me to really work with each individual business and community member and help businesses locate where they need to go. And you know, one of the great pieces of that puzzle is, because this position is through Eastern Maine Development Corporation, I have all the resources available to me in my toolbox to help with economic development needs and workforce development, funding and that type of thing, grant writing. And then also we work with the Katahdin Region Development Board, and they kind of oversee the work and help drive the mission forward to keep everything, all the conversations, regional.
Well, I know the monument's less than 3 years old, and I know you've only been on the job for a couple months, so I'm not trying to set you up with too hard of a question, but what do we know about the economic impact of the monument so far?
Well, we know that the monument is a great catalyst for economic development because we have folks that are coming into Maine already to be a part of the existing tourism industry and to see what Maine has to offer. And it's kind of one of those best-kept secrets up here in the region where folks can then extend their stay and be a part of all the great outdoor activities that are available. I mean, folks are somewhat familiar with what's going on at Baxter State Park if they're out of state, so folks come there anyway. But then to have this monument available as well that connects all these different towns and unorganized territories to the park, it allows these folks to come in, get acquainted with the towns. It provides opportunities for folks to spend their money in different restaurants and lodging and find out what's going on from a four-seasonal perspective. So we've heard a lot about mountain biking and hiking and skis and snowmobiling. So there's a lot of opportunities for folks to come and enjoy the outdoors out here, and this monument is a great catalyst for that.
Are we seeing that? Are we seeing more restaurants or restaurants reporting more visitors or customers?
So yeah, in my talks with various community leaders and businesses throughout the region, particularly in the north part of the region, I'm hearing a lot of economic benefit coming there. Folks coming in, wandering in, wondering, what's available for me. I want to spend money. I want to extend my stay. That last piece is really what I've heard the most of, is folks extending their vacations here in Maine when they find out all the great opportunities to enhance their vacation.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks so much for stepping up to the mic. I know you didn't expect to be called up to the mic today when you came today. He is Katahdin Region Economic Development Director for Eastern Maine Development Corporation. We'll go to a call now. This is Mohammed calling from Brunswick. Hi, Mohammed. Go ahead.
Hi. How's it going?
Great. Go ahead. Ask your question.
Yeah. So my question is that, being that this land has been occupied for the past 11,000 years, how have Native voices been incorporated into the way in which the Waters and Woods National Monument is being planned?
All right. Good question. Go ahead, Tim.
Yes, we've been meeting with all of the tribes, with Wabanaki people on a regular basis, contacted all the tribal historic preservation officers. We met with everyone last week to get that input on our brochure that we have, that we hand out, the Unigrid. We coordinated with them to make sure that the language was there. And we're working on getting an intern in from the tribes in the next year. So we've had regular and ongoing conversations there.
All right. Thanks for your question, Mohammed. We'll go to Todd, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, Todd. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi there. Thank you. Just a quick comment. I just want to say bravo to everybody that's been involved in getting the monument going. I'm very proud and need to brag about my 12-year-old Boy Scout son. Several years ago, wrote to and received a letter from President Obama and our congressional delegation urging their support for the monument. So it was a thrill for us to get up there last year finally and check it out. We had a great time. A little rough around the edges, but totally awesome. Lots of potential. Just bravo to everybody. I encourage folks to go up and visit. It's a wonderful place. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
Yeah, it's great to hear. It was a huge effort, and it's great to hear people from across the state that that joined in. And I think that his point, that it is a work in progress, is a real one. You know, this is a blank canvas. There's a handful of logging roads that go through almost 90,000 acres, and there's not a lot out there. And so there's a real opportunity for this planning process and to build the infrastructure where, these trails that are happening now are really exciting, and they're going to offer a lot of opportunity for people to go see parts of this park that they haven't been able to see before. And the Friends group just got a generous grant from L.L. Bean to build a campground so we can have more overnight stays. And that type of collaboration and development is really exciting.
Great. How large is the campground going to be?
We're not sure. Pretty small. It'll be probably 8 sites at the largest. But right now, it's close to the river and close to a boat launch where people have been kind of staying within a floodplain. And so this will give them opportunity to get off the river a little bit, have a little nicer area.
All right. Well, we have a voicemail that came in before the show. We're going to go to that next.
Hello, this is Nancy Hathaway. I'm calling from Surrey. And I'm calling because I think it would be really important of us to acknowledge the generosity of the Quimby family to give this land to the National Monument and to the people. They could have done anything with it, and I think we're really fortunate that we have it at our disposal to use and to be in nature. And one of the important parts that sometimes gets overlooked on this large acreage of land, as well as the North Woods itself, is our precious night sky. And just to call attention to it, and that this area of Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument is pretty much in the middle of the largest area of dark sky east of the Mississippi River. And because of the low-level light pollution, we're able to see stars and the Milky Way that few people can see on the East Coast. So thank you for bringing attention to Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument.
So one of my favorite stories about post-monument proclamation is within the proclamation that the president signed, it talks about the night sky and why it's important. And then we were being reviewed by the Trump administration, and Secretary Zinke came to visit, and he spent 2 days with us. And he and I hiked around. Many of us showed him the sights. And when I first met him, he said, you know, I think President Obama overreached with his proclamation. I mean, the objects of importance are one thing, but the night sky as an object of importance just seems like too much. Like, really? There's night sky everywhere. So fast forward 12 hours, we're camping out at the Lunxus camps. We're sitting around a campfire, and his communications director comes back into the fire, went and used the outhouse, and she was like, wow, I have never seen a night sky like this in my entire life. And it was very validating to ever say that.
That's a great story.
And we're so lucky to have stars over Katahdin again this year, September 21st. And it is it's our annual celebration of the dark skies in this area and what a resource it is. And we're really pleased to have three school groups join us this year. So we've had students join in the past, but to have them overnight and to really kind of digging into this subject is going to be exciting.
Matthew on Facebook says, I am a resident on the north end of the monument. I regularly utilize the monument's roads and trails to trail run, backcountry ski, and generally train for excursions I do elsewhere in the country. I love having this in my backyard, but my concern is, what is going to be done to maintain the road systems? Lack of regular maintenance will lead to much more costly repairs down the road.
So, that brings up one of my issues is safety, 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 and the roads are a great part of that. It's been a major concern. They're still used, they're actively used by logging trucks and other things, and so we have worked with the forest products industry, worked with the neighbors to make sure that we alert people of the safety of the roads. And one of the main things that we have spent money on is keeping the roads graded, replacing, frankly, a lot of, this started with PI, we're replacing a lot of culverts that are not in good shape with, thanks to work with the Fish and Wildlife Service as well to get them into bridges that allow for fish passage, and so you'll see a lot of that work. And for Matthew's comment, I can tell you there's a contract that's about to be awarded to grade those north entrance roads that do need to be graded.
All right. An email from Justin, who apparently is your barber, Lucas. I just wanted to thank Lucas for what he and his mom have done for the state of Maine. What exciting things do you have planned in the near future? Justin, your favorite barber.
That's great.
What kind of things do you have planned in the near future, he asks.
Well, I mean, one of our big efforts is to build out infrastructure. And so working really closely with the Park Service to make sure that we can kind of fast forward the things that need to be built. When we gave the land to the Park Service, we reserved the rights for 7 years to build certain types of infrastructure in certain places. And so we're working in consultation with the Park Service to identify what could be built and then getting that done. So we want visitors to have as deep of an understanding of this landscape as possible. And so building that interpretation, I think, is going to be really important in the short term, and that's really where we're focused now.
So are you looking at something like a visitor center or signs or what kind of things?
Yeah, so in the Park Service vernacular, it's a visitor contact area, so it's not a 10,000-foot square foot building with an auditorium and things like that, but a place that people can go visit, they can get maps, they can speak to a ranger, there can be some programming, some interpretation. But that first initial contact with a visitor to orient them to the landscape, to help them, you know, when they see a pond, when they see a cedar bog, when they hear about the Wabanaki history on a landscape, those 11,000 years that they were here before us, that the place becomes more meaningful. And so that's the type of thing that we're going to build.
Yeah, the first project's actually under construction on the trail on the north end on the Seboois River.
We'll go to Peter, calling from Northport. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I think it's great that we have this new national monument in Maine. I think it's the right thing to do at this point. But I have a chief concern, and that is if I drive up from Northport to go into the southeast corner of the national monument, you know, I want to be sure that once I get on 95, which exit do I take? How far do I go to the next intersection that I have to take? Is it a complex process, or can you explain to me how to, you know, undertake this journey? And I'd like to do it next week, possibly.
Great. Well, Peter, I just want to have them answer in two phases, if you would. First, if you could give Peter some directions, but then also tell us if there's a way to find directions online that are easy for those people.
Yeah, there are. NPS.gov, if you look on the official website for the monument, there's directions there. Also, the Friends Group has got a really fantastic map that you can purchase. You also can download a digital version, and so you can use it even if your cell phone doesn't have a connection. There's a couple different ways to get there, and depending on who you ask, that you probably get a different advice. So I would definitely refer to the website of the Park Service.
Yeah, the short answer is coming up from the south, you can get off at exit 244 in Midway or 264 in Sherman and either go north on 11 or south on 11 to get the Swift Brook Road, and that gets you right into the Loop Road.
Okay, a highway to 11 to the Swift Brook Road.
Yeah, Swift Brook Road's about 20 miles north of Midway, about 5 miles south of Sherman on Route 11.
All right.
But go to the Friends website, too, friendsofkww.org. And there's a phone number right on there. And most often, you'll get someone that'll walk you through most of what you need to know. But their resources online and trip reports are really helpful. The Friends team has done amazing work in regards to that.
Great answer. And, Peter, I thought I heard a second question there. Do you have a quick second question before we go to a break?
What's the cell phone situation?
Limited. Very limited coverage.
Yeah, spotty at best.
At best.
Spotty's an exaggeration. There you go, Peter. Thanks for your questions. We are going to take another quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation about the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument, give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, offering window and door replacement services as a Marvin replacement contractor. More at evergreenyourhome.com. The Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. And Friends of Acadia, members and volunteers preserving the splendor of Acadia National Park for current and future generations. Friendsofacadia.org.
When you're headed to college, you can end up with a big student loan really quickly.
I didn't understand what I was doing. You know, we were just signing papers and just, oh, you need this. Okay, well, I'm going to get that and let me take that. And then it's like, before you know, like, boom, you bought a house, basically.
Millions of students leave college without graduating. So they've still got those huge loans, but no degree. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up next is City Arts and Lectures. Environmentalist and author Bill McKibben discusses the future of the climate change movement. That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, an update on the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. Joining me, Lucas St. Clair, the executive director of Elliottsville Plantation, Inc., Kayla Rush, Education Coordinator for Friends of Katahdin Woods and Waters, and Tim Hudson with the National Park Service. He is Superintendent of the National Monument. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. For those of you right here, we welcome you to step to the mic to ask a question. I understand there are some kind of big events coming up around here. What do you want to tell us about the next month? Lucas, you first.
So the my favorite event of the year is the anniversary celebration of the monument actually becoming a monument. And this year it'll be on August 24th at the New England Outdoor Center. It also is the largest fundraiser for the Friends of Katahdin Woods and Waters. So it's a great night with music and great food and a lot of fun. So I encourage people to come up for that.
All right. Kaylee, what about you?
I would say Starship for Katahdin. That's September 21st. We mentioned that earlier. But also, we have a wonderful new trail crew, new to Katahdin Woods and Waters. But it's in collaboration with Friends of Baxter. And I actually got to join them yesterday out on the trails working. And what an amazing group. But we're really looking forward to this being our first year to have them in Katahdin Woods and Waters working on some of the trails in there.
All right. Well, great. Hugh and Warren is calling. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling, Hugh.
Oh, hi. Thanks. Thanks for taking the call. Simple question. Are there opportunities to help work on the infrastructure of the new monument?
Yeah, definitely. We have something. We're lucky to have VIPs here, volunteers in parks. And to get more information on that, you can actually contact Susan Adams with Elliottsville Plantation at lunksus@gmail.com. And it's a pretty amazing program, but I would say that's your best route.
Okay, say the email again and more slowly.
lunksus@gmail.com.
And how do you spell lunksus?
LUNKSOOS.
Ah, glad I asked. Great. Thanks, Hugh. There you go. Thanks for your call. We're going to go to Ruth, who's calling from Nordswalk. Hi, Ruth. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just wondering, will expansion up in that part of the state be limited? Because, you know, in light of the new land use regulatory change, that it'll extend development from an already developed hub from 1 mile out to 7 miles out. How will that affect ultimately you've got a beautiful piece of land, and the more people you draw to it, that's great. It's, you know, good for people to see, but how will that ultimately affect the land, if you know what I'm saying, and the appreciation that we can gain from being there when there's, you know, a million people?
I just want to be clear. Are you asking how the Katahdin Woods and Waters will affect the area around it and whether there'll be more development around the land?
Well, no, I'm wondering how this new ruling by LURC will affect the Katahdin Woods and Waterways in the North Woods.
So in the monument, it's federal land, so the LUPC, the Land Use Planning Commission, those adjacency rules are not, they don't follow. Outside the monument, that is all in the unorganized territory. They will follow the LUPC. At this time. So how that gets developed is not under our purview. But inside the monument, the LUPC does not have the jurisdiction.
Great. Thanks for your question, Ruth. We're going to go to Molly calling from Lovell. Hi, Molly. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. I know those folks on the panel because I work with Friends of Katahdin Woods and Waters on the board. So I have to make that confession first. But I do it because there are people who really care about this place, who want to make sure that it's well protected and that people have quality visitor experiences there. And that takes work. I'm grateful to the Quimbys, to Lucas, and to his mom and family, because they kickstarted, they made an amazing, unprecedented donation to the Park Service and the federal government by donating the land and providing some early funds and infrastructure. And they also kickstarted the Friends of Katahdin Woods and Waters, which is the way we can all contribute to it. So I just want to express my gratitude, and we focused a lot on the Friends' mission is both for protecting the resources, quality visitor experience, and supporting the gateway communities. I would second what Kayla said about check out the website, and you'll see a lot of things there, information and suggestions. So I don't have a question, I just have a plug, but it's both for the monument, for the Friends group, for the region, and for the partnership that you can tell by your panel is working very well.
Thank you, Molly, for your call. Mandy on Facebook says, if I'm looking to take a trip into the monument at some point during the summer, what are the best resources for planning? Is that your website, Kayla?
I would say so. Friendsofkww.org.
Okay, great. We're going to move to Evan, who's calling from Freeport. Hi, Evan. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
I'm calling with sort of two questions, a general one. Having been very familiar with that territory for the past 30 years, I'm having trouble understanding what anybody sees as a positive change. It used to be, and always has been, every bit is open to the public. There always has been, and were for many years, probably hundreds of miles of trails maintained through the territory, most of which were very old and historic, dating from the days, well, from long ago. And there was a lot more camping available there and along the river than there is now, not to mention the use of the river itself that made it possible to drive down and pick up people at the end of Haskell Deadwater.
We're tight on time, so I'm going to give our guests a chance to answer the question. What's better now than how it was?
Well, certainly the maintenance of the infrastructure itself. On this specific site, there certainly were never hundreds of miles of trails. And the trails that have been added in the last decade or so. There also has been a maintenance of the portage trails around some of the unpaddable falls, and all the campsites along the river have been maintained. Nothing has been taken away. But now there's much more resources and attention brought to this really special place that will encourage more people to come up and use it. So,
and those resources have really given opportunities to the students, the youth of this region. And I think if we can't say it's doing much more than that, that's pretty good in itself. But it's doing a lot more.
Yeah, we've actually been trying to improve those sites, and there's been nothing taken away.
Evan, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Leslie, who's calling from Montville. Hi, Leslie. Go ahead.
Hi. Something I think is very important to use as a promotion for Katahdin Woods and Waters. I'm hoping you already have potable water at the campsite there, because a lot of people used to make the equivalent saying, oh, Baxter's already there and it's wonderful. Many people go daytime to Baxter and don't realize there's no drinking water in Baxter. You have to schlep in all your own water for camping, or you have to have a water purification thing. But if that water is good, potable water is already at Katahdin Woods and Waters, that would be a major advantage for going there in particular.
Okay, plans to have drinking water.
We have heard the comment, there's no power there. And so in the future, we'd look at most a hand well probably in there. And there's one that we just need to test the water on that's actually available, but the surface water drinking is not going to happen. That would be a burden that you wouldn't want to do. So it's right. Hopefully some groundwater where you could get it out.
There likely will be, I can almost guarantee there'll be fresh drinking water at the visitor contact site that will be established.
But at each campsite, no, at the major campgrounds, that's would be in the future, and it would probably be a hand pump. One of the things that, and we've got a dark sky, and we've talked about a little rough on the edges. A lot of people, that's a big draw to people, is that there's many people come in have not really seen what life in the woods is even remotely about. We've got a lot of comments on that.
Leslie, thank you for your call. We'll go to Ken, who's calling from Bass Harbor. Ken, I have to warn you, we're tight on time, so if you could be quick, that would be great.
I will. Thank you. I just wanted to say that a state is very fortunate to have landscape-scale generosity like this, and we've benefited from it now in the course of a century three times, with Acadia and with Baxter State Park and now with Katahdin Woods and Waters. And philanthropy means love of humankind, and it's really manifested here in Maine. So thanks very much, you all.
Thanks, Ken, for your call. You were so quick, I have room for one more. Kathy from Rangeley. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Hi, I was just up there for 3 days about 3 weeks ago, and both paddled and mountain biked along the river two separate days, and then was involved in their first trail day, and it was just wonderful. I'm a naturalist and environmental educator, and the place is beautiful. The people were very passionate. The locals seemed to, the ones that we met, some young adults had grown up there as kids using the monument for other kinds of purposes, but seemed very happy to see it thriving. I did wonder how the education programs are funded with school budgets being tight and how people might help.
Kayla.
We still have help from the National Park Foundation and an endowment that was previously given. A lot of grant writing. We have friends, the Friends group does a number of, works on a number of grants almost constantly, and a lot of support from even private donations.
All right, there's your answer. Kathy, thank you for your call. Lucas, is still the goal to someday be a national park and not a national monument?
You know, we take that day by day. It's definitely something that was our initial goal, and we'd love to see legislation pass. And there could be an opportunity soon to do that, but we'll work on it, but we're not sure when it'll happen.
Okay. So with just a few seconds left, what are you most excited about for the next year? We talked about the events coming up. This time next year, what are we going to see that we don't see already at the park?
22 signs.
22? Where do they start?
They start at just south of Medway at exit 244. And then they're on the interstate at the next three exits, and then in the towns leading in. And we'll have some more people on board next year, too. But I think visually next year, the signs will be a big difference. And they don't look like they're 23 feet long, but Lucas found out they were.
Well, I really appreciate all of you here with us today at the North Lake Gallery. The voice you just heard, Tim Hudson, who is with the National Park Service. He is superintendent of Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. Also here, Lucas St. Clair, the executive director for Elliottsville Plantation, and Kayla Rush, education coordinator for Friends of Katahdin Woods and Waters. Today's program was part of Maine Calling's continuing focus on rural issues in our state. Thank you to our host here at North Light Gallery in Millinocket, Marcia Donahue. Thanks to Friends of Katahdin, Sam Deeren, who is also our former Maine Calling intern. Yes, Maine is a small state. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. We had additional help from John Bradford and Dave Bartlett. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.